John F. Kennedy Library, President's Office Files, Presidential Recordings Collection, Tape Number 28. 33 seconds of this tape have been excised for reasons of national security. The two excisions are indicated. For additional information, please see Recording Log Number 28. Excision 1, 9 seconds excised.
But from May of 69, we've never had any U-2 coverage of the Soviet Union, so we do not know what kind of practice they would use in connection with...
How do you know this is a medium-range ballistic missile?
The length, sir.
The what?
The length of it, yes.
The length of the missile, which part? I mean, which part?
The length of the missile, sir, is... Which one is that? This will show,
sir.
Yes. Mr. Graville, our missile man, has some pictures of the equivalent Soviet equipment that has been dragged through the streets of Moscow that can give you some feel for it.
There are two missiles involved. One of them is our SS-3, which is 630 mile non-rotator, 768 feet long. These missiles measure out to be 67 foot long. The other missile, 1100, is 73 foot long. The question we have in photography is the nose itself. The nose cone is not on that missile. 67 feet, the nose cone would be 4 to 5 feet longer, sir. And with this extra length, we could launching the missile from some of the other short-range missile data, it would take about a couple of hours to do this.
This is not defensed, I believe, at the moment.
Not yet, sir.
But this is important as it relates to whether these today are ready to fire, Mr. President. It seems almost impossible to me that they would be ready to fire with nuclear warheads on the site without even a fence around it. It may not take long to place them there to erect a fence, but at least at the moment there is some reason to believe the warheads aren't present and hence they are not ready to fire.
We do not believe they're ready to fire.
However, there's no feeling that they can fire from this kind of field position very quickly, is that true? It's not a question of waiting for extensive concrete pads and that sort of thing.
Unknown factor here, sir, is the degree to which the equipment has been checked out after it's been shipped to some union here. It's arranged the equipment. If the equipment is checked out, the site has to be accurately surveyed. The position has to be known. Once this is known, then you're talking a matter of hours.
Well, could this be an operational site except perhaps for the fact that there are points on no fence? Could this be operational now?
There's only one missile there, sir, and it's at the actual apparently launching area. It would take them, if everything were checked out, it would still take them in the order of 2 to 3 hours before they could get that one missile up and ready to go, sir.
Collateral reports indicated from ground observers that convoys of 50 to 60 of these kinds of Soviet vehicles were moving down into the San Cristobal area in the first couple of weeks of August. But this is the first time we have been able to catch them on photography at a location.
Say there's only one missile there?
There are eight missiles there. One of them is in what appears to be the position from which they're launched in the horizontal, apparently near an erector to be erected in the vertical position.
You're an erector. I mean, something has to be built, or is that something to be done in a couple of hours?
Mobile piece of equipment, sir. We have put any specific efforts on this, but here's the way we believe that it actually is. Something of this nature. Without evidence, this would be the director is helping to raise the missile from its transport up to the vertical position with the plate collector is on the ground.
Am I correct in saying that we have not located any nuclear storage site with certainty as yet? And this is one of the most important problems we face in properly interpreting the readiness of these missiles. It's inconceivable to me that the Soviets would deploy nuclear warheads on an unfenced piece of ground. There must be some storage site there. It should be one of our important objectives to find that storage site.
Yeah, I report, sir, that two additional SAC missions were executed yesterday. They were taken to Washington area last night. They're currently being chemically processed at the Naval Center at Suitland. They're due to reach us at the National PI Center on 8 o'clock tonight. Both of these missions go from one end of Cuba to the other, one along the north coast, one along the south. So additional data on activities or the storage sites, which we consider critical, may be in our grasp if we can find them.
And is it correct that there is outside of Havana an installation that appears to be hardened that might be the type of installation they would use for nuclear warheads? And therefore is a prospective source of such warheads.
Sir, I couldn't put my finger on that. The Joint Atomic Energy people may be looking at that, forming a judgment, but from photos alone, I cannot attest to that.
There would appear to be little need for putting this type of missile in there, however, unless it were associated with nuclear warheads.
Don't you have to assume these are nuclear? Oh, no question about that. The question is one of readiness to fire. And this is highly critical in forming our plans. The time between today and the time when the readiness to fire capability develops is very important. And to estimate that, we need to know where these warheads are. And we have not yet found any probable storage of warheads. And hence, it seems extremely unlikely that they are now ready to fire or may be ready to fire within a matter of hours or even a day or two.
Excision 2, 24 seconds excised.
When will those be ready?
They're supposed to be in, sir. I think that's right, isn't it, General Carter?
The readout from Sunday's should be available now. now, we have done see it.
And weren't there flights yesterday as well?
Two flights yesterday.
We don't have the results of those, yeah.
Thank you. Now, what is there, any further flight schedule?
There are no more schedules, sir.
These flights yesterday, you presume, covered the...
Well, the hope, sir, because the weather won't have been clear all along the island, so we can't claim that we will. We certainly, almost surely, do not have up-to-date photographic coverage on the whole island. Actually, one of our first questions is to consider whether we should not authorize more flights on the basis of more priorities. There's a specific question of whether we want a closer and sharper look at this area. That, however, I think should be looked at in the context of the question whether we wish to give tactical warning to any other possible activities.
I would recommend, Mr. President, that you authorize such flights as are considered necessary to obtain complete coverage of the island. Now, this seems to be ill-defined, but I purposely define it that way because we're running into cloud cover on some of these flights, and I would suggest we simply repeat the flight if we have cloud cover and repeat it sufficiently often to obtain the coverage we require.
Okay, fine, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Interesting.
Now, this is YouTube flying. It specifically excludes the question that Mac raised of low-level flying, which I think we ought to take up later after a further discussion of the possibilities here.
I have one additional note, sir, if I may offer it. Of the collateral information from ground observers as to where these kinds of trailers have gone, we don't have any indications elsewhere on the island of Cuba, except for this San Cristobal area where we do have cover. So we have no ground collateral, which indicates there might be an equivalent thing going on somewhere.
In other words, the only missile base, intermediate range missile base that we now know about is this one, correct? Is one or two?
One, three of them.
Three, but associated.
Do I understand that this is a battalion, as you estimated, Mr. Gravian?
Yes, sir. We estimate that four missiles make up a battalion, so that in this one that you're looking at, Mr. President, has eight missiles. It would be two battalions and a range of size. This one in front of the table is a second separate installation from which we can see six missiles. So there are probably two more battalions there. The missiles may be under the tree. The third installation has a tent, but there are no missiles identified anywhere in that area.
These are the only ones we now know about.
Yes, sir. Other than those cruise missiles that you're familiar with, those coastal tents and the surface air missiles.
Any thoughts, Mr.
Seem to be denying that it was on this basis, their own investigation.
would be if we have a few days from a military point of view, if we have the whole time, then I would think that there would be another course of action, combination of things that you might wish to consider. First, that we stimulate the OAS procedure immediately for prompt action to make it quite clear that the time is to be considered a real time has been violated. That action, whatever action we take is under the terms of real time. The OAS could constitute itself an organ of consultation promptly, although maybe it may take 2 or 3 days to get instructions from governments and things of that sort. The OAS could, I suppose, at any moment, take action to insist to the Cubans that an OAS inspection team be permitted to come and itself look directly at these sites, provide assurances to the hemisphere. That will undoubtedly be turned down. But it'll be another step in building up the position. I think also that we ought to consider getting some word to Castro, perhaps through the Canadian ambassador in Havana, or through his representative at the UN. I think perhaps the Canadian ambassador would be the better channel to get to Castro privately and tell him that this is no longer a support for Cuba, that Cuba is being victimized here, and that the Soviets are preparing Cuba for destruction or betrayal. You saw the Times story yesterday morning that high Soviet officials were saying to betray Cuba from Berlin. This already brought to Castro's attention. It ought to be said to Castro that this kind of base is intolerable, not acceptable. The time has now come when he must, in the interest of the Cuban people, must now break clearly with the Soviet Union and prevent this missile base from becoming operational. And I think there's certain military actions that we might well want to take straight away. First, to call up highly selected units from 1 to 150,000. Unless we feel that it's better, no desire to go to the general national emergency, so that we have a complete freedom of action. And we announce at the time that we announce this development, I think we do have to announce this development sometime this week, we announce that we are conducting a surveillance of Cuba, over Cuba, and we will enforce our right to do so. Reject the notion of secrecy in this hemisphere and a matter of this sort. We reinforce our forces in Guantanamo. We reinforce our forces in the southeastern part of the United States, whatever is necessary from a military point of view to be able to give the delivery of quelling strike at any of these installations, including the sand sites. And also take care of any MiGs or bombers that might make a pass at Miami or at the United States. Build up heavy forces if those are not already in position. That we then would move more openly and vigorously into the guerrilla field and create maximum confusion on the island without being too squeamish at this point about the covert character of what is being done. And we review our attitude on alternative Cuban government. We get Nero Cardona and his group and Manuel Ryan and his group and see if they won't get together on a progressive junta that would pretty well combine all principal elements. think that by and large, there are these two broad alternatives, one to quick strike, the other to alert our allies and Mr. Khrushchev that there is a totally serious crisis in the making here, and that Mr. Khrushchev may not himself really understand that or believe that at this point. I think when we are facing a situation that could well lead to general war, that we have an obligation to do what has to be done, but do it in a way that gives everybody a chance to pull away from it before it gets too far. And those are my reactions to this morning, Mr. President. I naturally need to think about this very hard in the next several hours,
Mr. President, there are a number of unknowns in this situation I want to comment upon. And in relation to them, I'd like to outline very briefly some possible military alternatives and ask General Taylor to expand upon them. But before commenting on either the unknowns or outlining some military alternatives, there are two propositions I would suggest we ought to accept as foundations for our further thinking. The first is that if we are to conduct an airstrike against these installations or against any part of Cuba, we must agree now that we will schedule that prior to the time these missile sites become operational. I'm not prepared to say when that will be, but I think that it's extremely important that our talk and our discussion be founded on this premise, that any airstrike will be planned to take place prior to the time they become operational, because if they become operational before the airstrike, I do not believe we can state we can knock them out before they can be launched, and if they're launched, there is almost certain to be chaos in part of the East Coast or the area in a radius of 600 to 1,000 miles from Cuba. Secondly, I would submit the proposition that any airstrike must be directed not solely against the missile sites, but against the missile sites plus the airfields plus the aircraft, which may not be on the airfields but hidden by that time, plus all potential nuclear storage sites. Now, this is a fairly extensive airstrike. It is not just a strike against the missile sites, and there would be associated with it potential casualties of Cubans, not of U.S. citizens, but potential casualties of Cubans, at least in the hundreds, more likely in the low thousands, say 2,000 or 3,000. It seems to me these two propositions should underlie our discussion. Now, what kinds of military action are we capable of carrying out, and what may be some of the consequences? We could carry out an airstrike within a matter of days. We would be ready for the start of such an airstrike within a matter of days. If it were absolutely essential, it could be done almost literally within a matter of hours. I believe the chiefs would prefer that it be deferred for a matter of days, but we are prepared for that quickly. The airstrike could continue for a matter of days following the initial day if necessary. Presumably there would be some political discussions taking place either just before the airstrike or both before and during. In any event, we would be prepared following the airstrike for an air invasion, both by air and by sea. Approximately 7 days after the start of the airstrike, that would be possible if the political environment made it desirable and necessary at that time. Associated with this airstrike undoubtedly should be some degree of mobilization. I would think of the mobilization coming not before the airstrike, but either concurrently with or somewhat following, say possibly 5 days afterwards, depending upon possible invasion requirements. The character of the mobilization would be such that it could be carried out in its first phase, at least within the limits of the authority granted by Congress. There might have to be a second phase, and that would require a declaration of a national emergency. Now, this is very sketchily the military capabilities, and I think you may wish to hear General Taylor outline some of those two.
We're impressed, Mr. President, with the great importance of getting a strike with all the benefit of surprise. Which would mean ideally that we would have all the missiles that are in Cuba above ground where we can take them out. That desire runs counter to the strong point the Secretary has made. The other optimum would be to get every missile before it becomes operational. Practically, I think our knowledge of the timing of the readiness is going to be so difficult that we'll never have the exact permanent, the perfect target. But what we'd like to do is to look at this new photography and take any additional and try to get the layout of the targets in as near an optimum position as possible and then take them out without any warning whatsoever. That does not preclude, I don't think, Mr. Secretary, some of the things that you've been talking about. It's a little hard to say in terms of time how much I'm discussing. But we must do a good job the first time we go in there, approaching 100% just as closely as we can with our strike. I'm having all the responsible commanders in this afternoon, Mr. President, 4 o'clock, to talk this out with them and get their best day. I would also mention among the military actions we should take that once we have destroyed as many of these offensive weapons as possible, we certainly should prevent any more coming in, which means a naval blockade. So that all, and also the reinforcement of Guantanamo, the evacuation of the Senate. So really, the point of time, I'm thinking in terms of three phases. One, an initial pause of some sort while we get them completely ready and get the right posture on the part of the target so we can do the best job. Then, virtually concurrently, the airstrike against, as the Secretary said, missile airfield, nuclear sites, if we know them. At the same time, the naval blockade. At the same time, reinforce Guantanamo and evacuate the dependents, and then start this continuous reconnaissance, which we can then continue over Cuba. Then the decision can be made as we're mobilizing with the airstrike as to whether we invade or not. I think that's the hardest question militarily in the whole business, and one which we should look at very closely before we get our feet in that deep mud of Cuba.
One, two other things, Mr. President. Kamiko asked to see you. Where is he? It may be of some interest to know what he says about this. If he says anything, he may be bringing a message on this subject. But I just want to remind you that you are seeing him, and that may be relevant to this problem. I'm not suggesting that necessarily you have to lay anything else you have to do at this point. Secondly, I don't believe myself that the critical question is whether you get a particular missile before it goes off, because if they shoot those missiles, we're in general nuclear war. In other words, the Soviet Union has got quite a different decision to make. If they shoot those missiles, in order to shoot them off before they get knocked out by an aircraft. So I'm not sure that this is necessarily
Well, I would strongly emphasize that I think our planning should be based on the assumption it is, Dean. We don't know what kinds of communications the Soviets have with those sites. We don't know what kinds of control they have with warheads. If we saw a warhead on the site, and if we knew that that launcher was capable of launching that warhead, I would strongly urge against the air attack, to be quite frank about it, because I think the danger to this country in relation to the gain that would accrue would be excessive. And this is why I suggest that if we're talking about an air attack, I believe we should consider it only on the assumption that we can carry it off before these become operational.
What is the advantage? There must be some major reason for the Russians to set this up. Must be that they're not satisfied with their ICBMs. What would be the reason that they would say?
But it gives them this time. It really makes the launching base for a short-range missile against the United States to supplement their rather defective ICBM system. But I'm wondering.
Of course, I don't see how we can prevent further ones coming in by submarine.
Well, that's true. I think there's all over.
I mean, if we need to run a blockade, they can come in by submarine.
Well, I think the only way to prevent them coming in, quite frankly, is to say you'll take them out the moment they come in. You'll take them out, and you will carry on open surveillance. You will have a policy of taking them out if they come in. I think it's really rather unrealistic to think that we could carry out an air attack of the kind we're talking about. We're talking about an air attack of several hundred sorties, because we don't know where these airplanes are.
Are you absolutely clear of your premise that an airstrike must go to the whole air complex?
We are, Mac, because we are fearful of these MiG-21s. We don't know where they are. We don't know what they're capable of. If there are nuclear warheads associated with the launchers, you must assume there will be nuclear warheads associated with aircraft. Even if there are not nuclear warheads associated with aircraft, you must assume that those aircraft have high explosive potential. We have a serious air defense problem. We're not prepared to report to you exactly what the Cuban Air Force is capable of, but I think we must assume that the Cuban Air Force is definitely capable of penetrating in small numbers our coastal air defense by coming in low over the water. And I would think that
we would not dare go in against the missile sites, knock those out, leave intact Castro's air force, and run the risk that he would use part or all of that air force against our coastal areas, either with or without nuclear weapons. It would be a very heavy price to pay in U.S. lives for the damage we did to Cuba.
President, about why the Soviets are doing this, Mr. McCone suggested some weeks ago that one thing Mr. Khrushchev may have in mind is that he knows that we have a substantial nuclear superiority, but he also knows that we don't really live under fear of his nuclear weapons to the extent that he has to live under fear of ours. Also, we have weapons nearby in Turkey and places like that.
How many weapons do we have in Turkey?
We have how many?
About 15, I believe.
I think that's right. But then they're also delivering vehicles that are could easily
aircraft
move through the aircraft and so forth from through Turkey. And Ms. McCone expressed the view that Khrushchev may feel that it's important for us to learn about living under medium-range missiles. And he's doing that sort of to balance that, that political, psychological factor. I think also that Berlin is very much involved in this. For the first time, I'm beginning really to wonder whether Mr. Khrushchev is entirely rational about Berlin. We talked about his obsession with it. And I think we have to keep our eye on that element. But they may be thinking that they can either bargain Berlin and Cuba against each other, or that they could provoke us into a kind of action in Cuba, which would give an umbrella for them to take action with respect to Berlin. It's a Swiss-Hungary combination. If they could provoke us into taking the first overt action, then the world would be confused and they would have what they would consider to be justification for making the move somewhere else. But I must say, I don't really see the rationality of Soviet's pushing of this far unless they grossly misunderstand the importance of Cuba to this country.
It's important, I think, to recognize that they did make this decision, as far as our estimates now go, in early summer. And this has been happening since August. Their task statement of September 12, which the experts, I think, attribute very strongly to Khrushchev himself, is all mixed up on this point. It has a rather explicit statement. The arms and military equipment sent to Cuba are designed exclusively for defensive purposes. And the President of the United States and the American military, just the military of any country, know what means of defense are. How can these means threaten the United States? Now there, it's very hard to reconcile that with what has happened. The rest, as the Secretary says, has many comparisons between Cuba and Italy, Turkey, and Japan. We have other evidence that Khrushchev is honestly believes, or at least affects to believe, that we have nuclear weapons in Japan. That combination.
You may go over that in this press conference.
It may mean Okinawa.
It's unlikely, but it's conceivable that nuclear warheads for these launchers are not yet on Cuban soil.
Well, it seems to me it's perfectly possible that they are in that sense a bluff. That doesn't make them any less offensive to us,
well,
because we can't have proof about it.
No, but it does possibly indicate a different course of action.
Yeah.
And therefore, well, I'm not suggesting how we should handle this. I think this is one of the most important actions we should take. To ascertain the location of the nuclear warheads for these missiles, and later in the discussion we should revert back to this. And there are several alternative ways of approaching it.
Doug, do you have any?
No, the only thing I would say is that this alternative course of warning, getting public opinion, an OAS action, and telling people in NATO and everything like that would appear to me to have the danger of getting us wide out in the open type thing. This is all there is to it. It might give them a chance to back off and not do anything. It might think that the chance of getting through this thing without a Russian reaction is greater under a quick strike than them building the whole thing up to a climax and going through. Therefore, be inclined to make it.
That is, of course, a possibility.
The difficulties, I share the Secretary of the Treasury's feeling a little bit, the difficulties of organizing the OAS, NATO, the amount of noise we would get from our allies saying that if they can live with Soviet MRBMs, why can't we? The division in the alliance, the certainty that the Germans would feel that we were jeopardizing Berlin because of our concern over Cuba, the prospect of that pattern.
Yes, but you see, everything turns loose now. What happens?
I agree.
They have a relatively quick strike. Then, in fact, they do back it up. Then you expose all of your allies and ourselves and all these great things.
Get all these noises again.
Without the slightest consultation or a warning of preparation.
But, of course, warning them, seems to be warning everybody, and obviously you can't sort of announce it 4 days from now, you've got to take them out. They may announce within 3 days they're going to have warheads on them. If we come and attack, they're going to fire them. Or what do we do then? We don't take them out. So we then announce what they do that, then we don't attack them with the weapon.
Is that's the question that nobody, I didn't understand, nobody mentioned, is whether this takeout, this mission, was confusing.
How effective can the takeout be, do they think?
It'll never be 100%, Mr. President. We know. We hope to take out a vast majority in the first strike. But this is not just one thing, one strike, one day, but a continuous air attack whenever necessary, whenever you discover a target.
You are now talking about taking out the Air Force as well, speaking in those terms. I do raise again the question whether we grant the problem, military problem, but there is, I would think, a substantial political advantage limiting the strike in surgical terms to the thing that is, in fact, the cause of action.
I suggest, Mr. President, that if you're involved in several hundred strikes, this is what you would, and against airfields, this is what you would do pre-invasion. And it would be very difficult to convince anybody that this was not a pre-invasion strike. I think also if you get into this volume of attack, the public opinion reaction to this, as distinct from the reaction to invasion, it's rather a thin difference. And from both standpoints, it would seem to me that if you're talking about a general air attack program, you might as well think about whether we can eradicate the whole problem by an invasion just as simply, with as little chance of reaction.
Well, I would think we should be in a position to invade at any time if we so decide. Hence, that in this preliminary, we should be, it's all bonus if we are indeed taking out weapons.
Well, let's say we just take out the missile bases, then they have some more. They obviously get them by submarine and so on. Well, you just can't keep.
I suspect, Mr. President, we'd have to take out the surface air missiles in order to get in, take some of them. That's not actually enough to take
it. How long do we estimate this will remain secure, this information? People have it.
In terms of the tightness of our intelligence control, Mr. President, I think we are in an unusually and fortunately good position. We set up a new security classification governing precisely the field of offensive capability in Cuba just 5 days ago. 4 days ago under General Carter. That limits this to people who have an immediate operational necessity in intelligence terms to work on the data, and the people who have
it.
That will be a very large number, but that's not generally where leads come from. And the more important limitation is that only officers with a policy responsibility for advice directly to you receive this.
How many will get it over the Defense Department, General, with your meeting this afternoon?
I was going to mention that. We'd have to ask for relaxation of the ground rules that Mike has just enunciated so that I can give it to the senior commanders who are involved in the plan.
So that you've got 50?
No, sir. No, sir. I would say that within, at this stage, 10 more.
But Mr. President, I think to be realistic, we should assume that this would become fairly widely known, if not in the newspapers, at least political representatives of both parties within, I'm just picking, I say a week. And I say that because we have taken action already that is raising questions in people's minds. Normally when a U-tube comes back, we duplicate the film. The duplicated copies go to a series of commands. Copy goes to SAC, copy goes to St. Land, copy goes to CIA. And normally the photo interpreters and the operational officers in these commands are looking forward to these. We have stopped all that. And this type of information is going on throughout the department. And I doubt very much that we can keep this out of the hands of members of Congress, for example, for more than a week.
Well, Senator Keating is already in effect.
Senator Keating said this on the floor of the Senate on the 10th of October. Construction has begun on at least a half dozen launching sites for intermediate range tactical.
But I suppose we'd have to put an effort to count on announcing it's not later than Thursday, Friday, this week.
There is a refugee who is a major source of intelligence on this, of course, who has described one of these missiles in terms that we can recognize that's now in this country.
So you want to give Keating this up?
We don't know.
One question, Mr. President, is whether as a matter of tactics we ought not to interview Senator Keating and check out his data. It seems to me that that ought to be done in a routine sort of way by an open officer of the intelligence agency.
Do you have any thoughts, Mr. President?
Well, I agree with Mac that that ought to be done. I think that we're committed at any time that we feel that there's a buildup that's in any way endangers to take whatever action we must take to ensure our security. I would think that the Secretary's evaluation of this thing being around all over the lot is pretty accurate, and I would think it'd take a week to do it. I think it'll go before then. I would like to hear what the responsible commanders have to say this afternoon. Question we face is whether we take it out or whether we talk about it. And most either alternative is a very distressing one, but of the two, I would take it out.
Well, the
assuming that the commanders felt that way. I'm fearful if we, I spent a weekend with the ambassadors of the Organization of American States. And fine, but I don't rely on much for any strength in an effort like this. I think that when we were talking about our other allies, they want to take the position that Mr. Bundy says, well, we've lived with them all these years, and I beat you, and I get your blood pressure. Which fact is, the country's blood pressure is up. And they're fearful and they're insecure, and we're getting divided, and I don't think that I take this little State Department bulletin that you sent out to all the congressmen. One of the points you make, any time the buildup endangers or threatens our security in any way, we're going to do whatever must be done immediately to protect our own security. And when you say that, I give unanimous support. People are really concerned about this, in my opinion. Cautious and talk to the commanders and see what they say, but not much for circularizing it over the hill or their allies, even though I realize it's a breach of faith somewhat not to confer with them. We're not going to get much help out of it.
There is an intermediate position. There are perhaps two or three of our principal allies or heads of government who we could communicate. Based on a 24-hour notice basis.
I certainly
is the
technology that tries to stop the planes, stop the ships, stop the submarines and everything else, and simply just not permit it. And then stop them from coming in there.
We're really talking about two or three different potential operations. One is the strike just on these three bases. The second is the broader one that Secretary McNamara is talking about, which is on the airfields and on the same sites and on anything else connected with missiles. Third is doing both of those things and also at the same time launching a blockade, which requires really, which would be a
necessarily be 7 days after the day, but I think you can basically consider 7 days after the airstrike.
You could get six divisions or seven divisions in the Cuba in 7 days?
The two plans we have, one is to go at maximum speed, which is the one referred to by Secretary McNamara, about 7 days after the strike. We put in 90,000 men in 11 days. If you have time, if you give us more time so we get all the advanced preparation and pre-positioning, we put the same 90,000 in the back. It's really the choice for those people.
How do you get them in, by ship or land?
By air, airdrop and ship.
Simultaneously.
90,000 or enough?
At least it's enough to start the thing going, and I would say it would be all again.
Particularly if it isn't directed initially to Havana, the Havana area. And this is a variant. General Taylor
do you have any real report on what the state popular reaction would be to all this? We don't know whether
there's great confusion, what do you think?
What?
Great confusion and panic, we think, but it's very hard to evaluate exactly what the military consequences
might be. Sometime today, I think the State Department, we will want to consider that. There's a real possibility you'd have to invade. If you carried out an airstrike, this might lead to an uprising such that in order to prevent the slaughter of the free Cubans, we would have to invade to reintroduce order into the country. And we would be prepared to do that.
I would think if there were a complete airstrike against all air forces, you might as well do it.
Well, now let's decide what we ought to be doing.
Can I make one more question?
Yeah.
Is it absolutely essential that you wait 7 days after you have an airstrike? I would think that 7 days, that's when you're going
to
have all.
You run the risk of giving up surprise if you start moving your troops around in order to reduce that.
Yeah, the only thing is, there's been so much attention on Berlin in the last, would you have to move them so that everybody would know it was
well, coming? It's troops plus shipping, even more so. You're going to have to assemble the ships necessary, and that will be very, very overt, and we can think of no way to cover that.
May I suggest, Max, we mentioned this other plan was talked about, we should be prepared for a series of eventualities after the airstrike starts. I think it's not probable, but it's conceivable that the airstrike would trigger a nationwide uprising. And if there was strong opposition among the dissident groups, and if the airstrike were highly successful, it's conceivable that some U.S. troops could be put in less than 7 days.
That's correct. Our first, our airdrops and our Marines, well, the airdrop at least, could get in 5 days. That might do the trick, but this is really a national upheaval.
So we should have a series of alternative plans, is all I'm suggesting, other than the 7 days.
I just think that if that five-day period, the United States is going to be under such pressure by everybody not to do anything, and it's going to be also pressure on the Russians to do something against us. If you could get it in, get it started so that there wasn't any turning back.
The problem is, as I understand it, you got two problems. One is how much time we've got on these particular missiles before they're ready to go. We have 2 weeks. If we had 2 weeks, we could lay on all this and have it all ready to go, but the question really is whether we can wait 2 weeks.
I don't think we'll ever know, Mr. President, the operational question, because this type of missile can be launched very quickly because it's really expedient.
Do we have any intelligence?
Even today, this one area might be operational. I can see that it's not.
One very important question is whether there are other areas which conceivably might be even more operational that we have not identified. This is why I think the moment we leave here back, we just have to take this new authority we have. May I ask General Carter whether the collateral intelligence relates only to this area, as I understood it this morning.
That's right. That's why we specifically covered this area on the one Sunday we crossed by.
May I go back a second hour to the point the President raised a moment ago? Mr. President, I don't believe that if we had 2 weeks, if we knew that at the end of 2 weeks we were going in, I don't believe we could substantially lessen the 5 or 7 day period required after the air attack, prior to the invasion, for the size force we're talking about. Because we start with the assumption the air attack must take them by surprise. We would not be able to take the actions required to shorten the 5 to 7 day period and still assure you surprise in the air attack. And therefore, we haven't been able to figure out a way to shorten that 5 to 7 day period while maintaining surprise in the air attack.
What are you doing for that 5 days? Moving ships or where?
Moving ships and moving. We have to move transport aircraft by the scores around the country. We should move ships. Actually, the ship movement would not be as extensive in a 7 day invasion as it would be in an 11 day after the airstrike. We have been moving already on a very quiet basis, munitions and POL, and we will have by the 20th, which is Friday, I guess, we will have stocks of munitions and stocks of POL
southeast part of this country. So that kind of movement, petroleum and oil and lubricants. So that kind of movement has already been taking place, and it's been possible to do it quietly. The armor movement would be noticeable if it were carried out in the volume we require. And hence, the point I would make is that knowing ahead of time, 2 weeks ahead of time, that we would carry out the invasion would not significantly reduce the 5 to 7 day interval between the strike by air and the invasion time, of given the size force we're talking about.
I think her point of view may change somewhat, we're subject to adjustment. If the decision were to take out only the known missile sites and not the airfield, there's a great danger of a quick dispersal of all the interesting aircraft. If we get surprised, there's not nullifier attack. The missiles can't run off quite readily.
What is the advantage of taking out these airplanes would be to protect us against a reprisal?
Yes.
By them, I would think you'd have to assume they'd be using iron bombs and not nuclear weapons, because obviously, why would the Soviets commit to be awarded again under that sort of half-ass way?
I think that's reasonable.
But they still have 10 IL-28s, 20.
They turn out 25 bigger for anyone.
So you think that if we were going to take out the missile sites, you'd want to take out these planes?
There are 8 airfields that are capable of mounting these jets.
But politically, if you're trying to get him to understand the limit and the non-limit and make it as easy for him as possible, there's an enormous premium on having a small and clear-cut an action as possible. Because the hazard of going after all the operational airfields becomes a kind of
general war. The number of hours required for each type of airstrike, if you were just going for the
missile. Sure. Right, well, now, what is it we have? What is it we want to? The next 24 hours to prepare for any of these three. It seems to me that we want to do more or less the same things no matter what we find.
We've authorized the president to have a decision for additional intelligence reconnaissance, a minor decision that we'll talk to Keating. Seems
I
to
don't think Keating or
we'll leave
about.
That out.
Okay. And I think that he'll be saying afterwards that we tried to.
All right, the next, I should think we need to know the earliest readiness for the various sizes of airstrike and how long they would take to execute.
Probability.
One other question is, what, if anything, has to be done to be prepared for the eventuality of a Soviet reaction?
And then sort of what we want to do is to figure out what are the minimum number of people that we really have to tell, I suppose, whether there's a goal or not.
You know, the goal, it's hard to say about that now. Got to tell, it seems to me you're going to have to tell SACUR and the commandant.
I would think this business about the Soviet reaction, it might be helpful that we could maybe take some general war preparation type of action that would show them that we're ready if they want to start anything without looking like we're starting anything.
One,
we just don't know.
On this track, one obvious element on the political side is, do we say something simultaneously, or to the Cubans, to the Soviets, or do we let the actions speak for itself?
Yes, this is the point, whether we say something to the Cubans or the Soviets before
us. I think what we ought to do is after this meeting this afternoon, we ought to meet tonight again at 6, consider these various proposals. In the meanwhile, we'll go ahead with this maximum, whatever is needed from the flights. In addition, I don't think we got much time on these missiles. They may be. So it may be that we just have to kind of wait 2 weeks while we're getting ready to be more. We may just have to just take them out and continue our other preparations. If we decide to do that, that may be where we end up. I think we ought to, beginning right now, be preparing, because that's what we're going to do anyway. We're certainly going to do number one. We're going to take out these missiles. The question will be whether what I would describe as number two, which would be a general airstrike, that we're not ready to say.
suggestion, Mr. President. There will be meetings in the White House. I think the best we can do is to keep the people with a specific Latin American business blank and describe the rest as intensive budget review sessions. I haven't been able to think of any others.
Nobody, it seems to me, in the State Department. I discussed the matter with Boland from the Soviet pod and told him he could talk to Thompson. So that's those two. It seems to me that there's no one else in the State Department that ought to be talked to about it in any level at all. And until we know a little more, and as I say, in defense, we've got to keep it as tight as possible, particularly what we're going to do about it. Maybe a lot of people know about what's there, but what we're going to do about it really ought to be the tightest of all, because otherwise we'll pitch it up.
Mr. President, may I suggest that we come back this afternoon prepared to answer three questions. First, should we surface our surveillance? I think this is a very important question. At the moment, we ought to try to decide today either yes or no.
By surface,
I mean, should we state publicly that you have stated we will act to take out any offensive weapons in order to be certain as to whether there are or are not offensive weapons? We are scheduling U-2 flights or other surveillance.
Reconnaissance
flights to obtain this information, and we'll make the information public.
Yeah, that'd be one.
All right. This is one question. The second question is, should we proceed the military action with political action? If so, on what timing? I would think the answer is almost certainly yes. And I would think particularly of the contacts with Khrushchev. And I would think that if these are to be done, they must be scheduled in terms of time very, very carefully in relation to a potential military action. There must be a very, very precise series of contacts with them and indications of what we'll do at certain times following that. And thirdly, we should be prepared to answer your questions regarding the effect of these strikes and the time required to carry them off.
How long it would take to get them organized.
Exactly. We'll be prepared.
How many days from tomorrow morning would it, take to take out just these
missile sites,
which we will need to know now? How long before we get the information about the rest of the island, do you figure, Jeff?
It could take weeks, Mr. President.
Weeks?
For complete coverage of a cloud-covered island.
Well, we've got about 80% out of it.
Yes, sir. It depends much on what we get out of yesterday's flight, so they won't be...
But there are clouded areas, Mr. President, as I understand it, and there are areas that are very substantial and permanently covered with cloud-covered.
We'll have preliminaries by 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Well, what about clearing the island, the part of the island that isn't covered by this flight by tomorrow morning? What about doing that tomorrow, plus the clouded part, doing low level? We got a plane to go.
We can certainly go low level, and we have been reluctant to do that. The one thing to worry about on low level is that will create a sense of tactical alert in the island, and I'm not sure we want to do that. Our guess is that the high level ones have not, in fact, been detected.
No reaction. I would think that if we are going to go in and take out this and any others we find, that we would at the same time do a general.
You could at the same time do a low level look at what we have not seen. That would certainly be sensible.
Then we would be prepared
on the same day
to take those out.
For evidentiary purposes, someone has made the point this morning that if we go in on a quick strike, we ought to have a photographic plane 30 seconds ahead to show our.
All right, well, now I think we've got to possible for this for us to do anything quickly and quietly, completely. That's what we've got to be doing the next 2 or 3 days. We'll meet at 6.
How long? I just wondered how long it would take if you took it ahead of an invasion.
About an invasion?
No, how long would it take take over the island?
Very hard to estimate, Bobby, but I would say that in 5 or 6 days, the main resistance ought to be overcome. We might then be in there for months thereafter.
Five or 7 days of air plus 5 days of invasion.
I wonder if CIA would give us a state, CIA, what the latest thing is on popular
story.
I just hate to even waste these 6 hours, so it may be that you want to be doing some movements in the next 6 hours.
Six o'clock.
minutes once I'm there.
You bring who you think ought to be brought.
Yeah, I urge everybody to use the east gates rather than the west gates.
I think we ought to get to. What's Mr. McCone doing out there, General?
He's bearing the steps on the front lawn.
He's back.
He's
getting back.
I talked
to him.
But
he'll be out here talking to him.
I think he'd rather go back.
Can be done.